supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we are joined by Manar Mahawesh of Mint Press News. We'll spend the first segment of the program talking about a recent bill passed in the U.S. Senate criminalizing criticism of Israel. We'll also talk about ongoing efforts to censor and rate news online through a right-wing-backed effort at NewsGuard. Then we'll be segueing into the ongoing coup in Venezuela. For the second segment, we're joined by independent journalist Abby Martin of the Empire Files. Stay with us. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we welcome back Manar Mahawesh. She is the founding editor of MintPressNews.com. Mint Press News is really on the cutting edge, on the front lines of the news that doesn't make the news. And today we are fortunate to have updates from Manar about many things going on in the world around us. Everything from the passage of the anti-boycott divestment sanctions bill regarding Israel, the ongoing attempts to censor online and social media and so-called fact-checking, with now a new threat on the horizon. And Manar will share with us what that is. So, Manar Mahawesh, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Manar, let's start here. This just happened recently. The U.S. Senate quietly advanced its free speech busting anti-BDS bill. Whitney Webb wrote about that from MintPressNews.com. This just passed the Senate. So, tell us about this. What's going on with this bill?
We're no stranger to this anti-BDS push that's taking place across the country. And this was the latest one that took place. And it's obviously a form of anti-free speech propaganda that's being pushed by the Israeli government that's weaving its way into our system to quash people's right to boycott apartheid in Israel. And so this is really concerning. I think only 19 were against it, which was a very, very low number compared to like other BDS bills that are being passed. So something that we should keep our eyes on. The American public is starting to become more and more aware of how U.S. policies and U.S. funding is supporting and enabling apartheid in Israel. People are waking up to understanding Palestinian human rights that are being abused at the hands of the Israeli government, which is being funded by our government. So it's more important now than ever that people use their free speech right to support a boycott. I mean, it's really ridiculous to think that now, in 2019, in America, in the United States of America, the beacon of democracy and free speech, that you as an American cannot speak up against apartheid and you can't boycott a certain company or organization or person even because that organization is funding apartheid in Israel. And so this is going to be put in place for companies. It's going to become illegal for American companies to boycott Israel. It's going to be illegal for universities to also boycott Israel. So it's very, very scary stuff.
And so this is referred to as the Strengthening America's Security in the Middle East Act. Just the Orwellian titling here is something that we should behold. Manar, what is the United States government doing restricting free speech of activists in the U.S. to call out the apartheid situation that's taking place in Palestine?
Well, it's just control. It's just another way to control the free thought of Americans into using their rights as individuals to be able to take action against non-moral kind of pushes to support apartheid in other countries. And this is a really blatant example of Israeli meddling in U.S. government. These bills would not be possible without the help of these Israeli-funded and supported think tanks. They wouldn't be possible without people like Benjamin Netanyahu, one of the most corrupt human beings to live in the world today, who is influencing our president from Donald Trump to influencing other U.S. officials in our government to basically uphold the rights of Israelis and uphold apartheid, as you would say, over the rights of Americans. And so it's so anti-American for such a bill to be pushed down our throats, specifically because it's trying to control our free speech.
Indeed it is. And, you know, for listeners that are attuned to this issue, of course, Nora Barrows Friedman, who's been on the program before, writes for Electronic Intifada. She's written a lot about this. She's written a lot about the BDS issue and wrote a great book about campus activism. And of course, as you know, Manar, and you will have covered this at Mint Press News, that several states around the country are trying to enact very similar kind of laws like we're seeing now on the federal level. So this has been a while coming. I suppose, not to be cynical, but we shouldn't be surprised that this is actually happening for those who have been paying attention to this issue. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, this is a desperate push by the Israeli government to get these things weaved into our local and state government, because Israel knows that the BDS movement is the most powerful nonviolent movement that is facing up against the apartheid state. They know its power, and they are going wherever they can to try to make it illegal to practice a boycott. The boycott movement, the BDS movement, is exactly why South Africa ended its apartheid policies. And we have Israeli officials that have come out and have said that the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement is legitimately hurting the Israeli government and its economy. And so they know this, and so they're turning to their BFF, which is the United States of America, and they come to us so that we can feed these policies to the American people, and it's going to be spreading like wildfire across these states. Now that this has passed the Senate, it's going to be almost impossible to speak up against Israel, because now you're also going to be accused of anti-Semitism in the process.
Right. And let's unpack that very quickly, Manar Mahawesh. We've covered this on this program many, many times because we've covered a lot of issues regarding Israel and Palestine. And one of the things that we have to say over and over and over as a disclaimer, which we shouldn't have to, but it is that
yes,
criticism of Israeli policy, criticism of Israeli state policy in Palestine, that is not anti-Semitic. I'm not suggesting that there aren't anti-Semites or anti-Semitic people or people that are prejudiced. I'm saying flat out that not all criticism of Israeli policy is anti-Semitic. You know, it seems that this is sort of just a big broad brush and a one-size-fits-all bill here that we're seeing in the U.S. Senate.
Absolutely. And I think people need to understand that Israel does not represent Judaism, just like Saudi Arabia does not represent Islam. You know, these are two countries that are vehemently going against their own religion by practicing policies that are genocidal and that are being led by very corrupt individuals. In fact, the most outspoken people against Israel are Jews themselves. You know, Jewish people from around the world are some of the most silenced people in U.S. media, and they are the ones who are speaking up and protesting against Israel, saying that Israel does not represent Judaism. Judaism is a very beautiful religion that promotes peace and that promotes unity and love, just like Christianity does and Islam. But, you know, we have these corrupt politicians that use religion to push their agenda for ethnic cleansing and colonialism and land theft. That's what most political powers do at the end of the day.
I wanted to bring this up. Last summer, Noam Chomsky, in an interview with Amy Goodman at Democracy Now! On the Pacifica Network, said what a lot of folks who have followed this for a long time already know. Chomsky says, take the huge influence of interference in our elections. And he asks, did the Russians interfere in our elections? An issue of overwhelming concern in the media. Chomsky goes on to say, in most of the world, that's almost a joke. First of all, if you're interested in foreign interference in our elections, whatever the Russians may have done, Chomsky says, quote, barely counts or weighs in the balance as compared with another state does, openly, brazenly, and with enormous support. Israeli intervention in U.S. elections vastly overwhelms anything the Russians may have done, even to the point where the prime minister of Israel goes directly to Congress without even informing the United States president and speaks to Congress with overwhelming applause to try to undermine the president's policies. So, you know, here we have, you know, one of the most prominent U.S. intellectuals. Granted, I know people have some issue with some of Chomsky's stances, and of course we could have some issue with everyone's. But this point in particular, we are hearing so much about meddling in U.S. elections from Russia, but no one wants to talk about AIPAC. No one wants to talk about these issues. What's your view on that, Manar Mahawesh?
That's what I was saying at the very beginning, is like we have people like Netanyahu running around like in our Congress and Senate, like he owns the place. It's a really, really messed up system that we have, because our government is not truly representing the American people. It's representing the interests of Israel. And in fact, Trump, in several interviews, just like Noam Chomsky said, Trump has even admitted blatantly that his policies that he pushes, especially when it comes to foreign policy, are driven for the interests of Israel, not the interests of the American people. And this is obviously very scary, because we have a system now that's not representing us, and people are becoming more aware of this. and they're getting frustrated, and more people are jumping on the BDS bandwagon because of that, because they are sick and tired of having a foreign government like Israel controlling our politicians when they should be representing us, you know, we the people. And so that's really why BDS is getting attacked, is because of how popular it's becoming. And that's why I was mentioning that it really is a desperate plea to quash that, because Netanyahu, people like Netanyahu, people like that are coming from AIPAC and other Israeli-funded think tanks, they know the power of the people, and that's why they're literally trying to make basic things like free speech illegal.
We're speaking with Manar Mahawish, founding editor of Mint Press News. You can learn more at mintpressnews.com. Manar, let's move into some of the other things that are going on and some of the things that you're focusing on. There are a couple of those. And the last time you were on the program, you were talking about efforts to censor online news content, the social media presence of censors and so-called fact checkers. And we were talking about the Facebook purge, the 800 sites that were being kicked off the platform. And since then, Mint Press News has actually been at the receiving end of new targeted attacks from new organizations that are using the fighting fake news mantra as a Trojan horse to censor outlets like yours. Can you bring us up to speed and update us about some of these new efforts to censor online?
Yeah, so there's this new project called NewsGuard Technologies, which is basically, like you said, it's coming out into the public eye as wanting to fight fake news, when in fact it's founded and it's funded by and advised by and partnered with some of the nation's most influential billionaires, neoconservative think tanks, war profiteers, and tech giants. And we were actually recently targeted by NewsGuard with 8 loaded questions about our funding, who owns Mint Press, and then also like some of our leanings and our coverage, and then also some like really weird questions about why our photos are not credited to their source when they are credited to their source. But anyways, these questions that we were targeted with were basically made in a way, they were framed in a way to frame us as being an untrustworthy news organization and being on the political fringe and being a fake news website. And so we dug a little bit deeper into this NewsGuard, and it turns out that this new tech company, which is basically a news ranking company, was founded by a former Wall Street executive who literally works within the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, and the upper echelons of the corporate media.
Just for listeners that don't know, the two think tanks you just named are far right wing think tanks. But go ahead, Manar.
These are neoconservative think tanks that literally work hand in hand with government to draft war policies, to draft policies that work to exploit people abroad. And some people on the board of NewsGuard include Tom Ridge, the first Secretary of Homeland Security. He's the guy who, under George W. Bush, created the terror threat level color rating. You know, red is like urgent, there's a terror threat, green, like everything's safe and sound.
Tom Ridge is also the person that, once he left the Orwellian Department of Homeland Security as the first cabinet secretary for that position post 9/11, he wrote a book where he admitted that the color-coded alert system was manufactured with the FBI and through DHS, and that it actually didn't correspond to any actionable intelligence. He also went on to say that the Bush administration had asked him to artificially elevate the nation's security to a red alert before the 2004 election. He claimed that he resisted it and he was against doing this to manipulate the system. But he already admitted that they created the system to manipulate the public on the basis of fear anyway.
So he created the system to manipulate the public, and he's bringing it right here to NewsGuard. You know, he's brought this like exact same color coding system to NewsGuard. And by the way, you know, RT, because it's funded by the Russian government, got a red news ranking, whereas Voice of America, which is funded by the U.S. government, got a green.
I want to remind listeners, you're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. We're talking to Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News at mintpressnews.com. We just started talking about NewsGuard. You can learn more about them at newsguardpec.com. And after this musical break, we're going to continue our conversation with Manar Mahawish. Stay with us.
Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News at mintpressnews.com. And before the break, we were talking about new efforts to fight so-called fake news through censorship and rating systems. The latest coming from NewsGuard, newsguardtech.com. We were just talking about how some of the people that work over at NewsGuard are in far-right think tanks, not unlike how Facebook was using the Atlantic Council, the PR arm for NATO, was using the Weekly Standard before they shuttered far-right paper as fact checkers. Now we're talking about NewsGuard. We were talking about Tom Ridge, the former Secretary for Homeland Security in the United States. And you mentioned someone else, Manar Mahawish. Who are you getting into next?
Oh, I was talking about Richard Stengel, former editor of Time Magazine and Undersecretary of State of Public Diplomacy under the Obama administration. But then it gets even worse. Over here, we have retired General Michael Hayden. He's the former director of the CIA and the former director of the National Security Agency and former principal deputy director of National Intelligence under the George W. Bush administration. And there's a few other people like Elise Jordan, who's a former speechwriter for Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. And so if you see the trend here, I mean, these are all neocons. These are all neoconservative people that helped push for war in Iraq and Afghanistan, who justified the killing and murder of like over 2 million people in Iraq, 2 million people in Afghanistan. And so these are the people who are being assigned at NewsGuard to basically manage the free flow of information and tell us what is real news and what's fake news. And so when they contacted me with this like loaded questionnaire, it made us question like, well, who are these guys? And the second we found that out, we went on the total offensive and released two exposés on NewsGuard to show the public about who these people are. And what's really important is not just like we have this news ranking system. I mean, this is really scary Orwellian stuff. NewsGuard news ranking system is already being integrated in all public libraries across the United States. It is already effective in all 51 public libraries in Hawaii. It's being pushed in the rest of the public libraries across the United States and all public universities across the United States. In addition to this, the news ranking system is being integrated involuntarily in all Microsoft devices. They are working up a deal right now to get it integrated in Facebook and Google so that it'll give you a big warning if a website is not ranked to the quality that they want them to be, or green that it's safe. And it's not just about the ranking. Eventually what they're going to do is if a website makes the red ranking, they're going to delete you off the face of the internet. So this is why it's so scary what they're trying to do. Right now they're also working deals with the EU. I saw a report that NewsGuard is working up deals with the EU to get this integrated across all technological devices across the EU. So one has to question how an organization that is being presented to the American public as a trustworthy news ranking system that's trying to restore the fundamentals of journalism is working hand in hand with the U.S. government, with special interest groups to basically quash independent and alternative media, but also to control the free flow of information.
Yeah, Manar, and one of your reporters, Whitney Webb, wrote that expose and has also been on Media Roots, recently did a podcast with Robbie Martin that was really fantastic, and we're having Abby Martin on later in the show. I'm sure we're going to cover NewsGuard with her as well. But this is definitely a terrifying little startup, if you will. As you know, I have my own project that seeks to rank news outlets, but we do it in a very different way, which is basically by allowing news consumers to review articles and create the ratings that way based on the public's trust and not this kind of behind-the-scenes idea. And what we call that is crowd-contested media, which is very different than NewsGuard's approach here, which seems to become a default built into your product. And I think we can all agree that green, yellow, and red is not a very nuanced system.
I thought of you actually right away when I saw them, like, you know, Chase needs to see what these guys are doing.
What I found most interesting is that Mint Press News, as far as I can tell, is the only news outlet that has come out and really exposed the people that are behind this, whereas I keep seeing articles in Business Insider and Wired and other major outlets that just seem to be praising this as good news for the news industry without any skepticism as to the people that are behind it or their intentions.
People that sit on their board are part of the media establishment. They have people from Wired magazine, they have people from NBC, CNN, and you name it, working at NewsGuard. So there's no question that these organizations are going to be praising NewsGuard, the founder, one of the founders, Stephen Brill. So he's like a former Time journalist.
So you got corporate media people, deep state people, intel people,
yes.
JSOC people,
yes.
NSA, CIA. And it's interesting over at NewsGuard with their little shield, go to newsguardtech.com. Why trust us, our team, the advisory board, former speechwriter for Condi Rice, like you said. I mean, again, Tom Ridge from the Bush administration. This is just absolutely riveting. And if you go to the homepage, and I want people to actually do this, restoring trust and accountability, it says, for fighting fake news. And they call it a SWAT team. I mean, just the militarized language here. And as Chase alluded to, the red-green system, the red-yellow-green, this would be laughable, right, if it weren't so serious. And now it's embedded everywhere. It's going to be all over in your devices. It's going to be in the browsers.
It's everywhere, and I wouldn't be surprised if NewsGuard is actually funding a lot of these positive articles to come out about them. And the reason I say that is because they're already funding their own studies on how the American public wants NewsGuard technologies to do things for them. I mean, they've partnered up with the Knight Foundation, and they're funding their own Gallup polls. They're funding their own polls and articles about themselves. So I wouldn't be surprised if those articles, a lot of them, were coordinated in that way too.
You're right, Manar. And a big reason why they may or may not be doing that is to push this idea of their other product, BrandGuard. Can you speak to us a little bit about what's going on there?
BrandGuard is basically a way to demonetize organizations. So if you get a red rating, you're considered a bad fake news organization, according to NewsGuard, the NewsGuard is actually, through their brand guard, they're going to contact advertisers and warn them to not do business with you. And so they're doing what Facebook and Google and all of these other social media giants have been doing for a while, which is to demonetize you as an organization so that they can be able to shut you down and take you out of business. Really, really scary stuff.
So Manar Mahawish, more than the organization prop or not, where they were creating blacklists and through intimidation and innuendo trying to sway people from going to their sites, BrandGuard is an effort to really target how organizations like yours, it wouldn't be difficult, right, for an organization like BrandGuard to come over and say, hey, anybody that's donating to this small nonprofit, here's some of the things that they've done. And they could easily mischaracterize anything anyone's doing by cherry picking a particular story or two. I mean, again, this is all the problem with outsourcing critical thinking. And this is why we need critical media literacy education more than ever. Because these kinds of organizations are coming in looking like heroes. But it's clearly another example of the fox guarding the hen house. And again, as Chase was saying, as you were saying, I haven't seen much outside of Abby Martin, Robbie Martin, Whitney Webb, you, Manar, Mint Press News, what we've been doing at Project Censored. I haven't seen a lot about NewsGuard.
Yeah, the only other place that covered NewsGuard is RT. And, good for them because, they're responding to them getting a red ranking. But you're right. Not many organizations are covering what's happening with NewsGuard. And I think that we need to be really extra loud about this because it's slowly being integrated into our technological devices and systems in a way that this news ranking system is going to be unavoidable. And so we're going to wish that we were covering this and heard about it. We have been really super loud about it. Our article on NewsGuard actually went viral, which is really, really good news, but not many organizations have been covering it. As you said, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, Manar, your article written by Whitney Webb did go viral. I was one of the many people that read that. And on her podcast with Media Roots, she talked about the importance of us talking about the people behind this organization right now while these sweeping moves are being made by NewsGuard. I'm wondering, though, do you think that this isn't something that we necessarily need to fear because maybe over a matter of time, more journalists will start to pick away at the pieces of this story and uncover the motivations behind this organization? Do you think that this is going to become integrated so fast that we really do need to be all in right now?
I really, really don't know. But I do have a little bit of hope because I just attended the Summit for Common Ground, which was an alternative media meetup for independent or alternative media organizations that have been targeted via suppression. Many of them have talked about being targeted by NewsGuard and getting the red rating already. And so I think a lot of the organizations that are going to get the green rating, we already know The Intercept, Democracy Now, I believe they both have already gotten the green rating, and The Nation and Mother Jones have already got, those are considered the alternative media giants, right? The giants of the alternative media. And they're getting the green rating. And so as long as they're covered I don't think that they're going to be giving much attention to the fact that smaller organizations like Mint Press or maybe Project Censored or others, I don't think that they're going to come to our defense because they're jumping on the establishment bandwagon on a lot of narratives and story narratives. And so I would like to think that they will come into our defense, but I really don't think that's going to happen. However, I do know that something else is happening, which is the alternative and independent media, the true independent alternative media organizations and journalists and activists are coming together like never before. They are uniting under this threat of censorship, just like we saw in Houston at the United for Common Ground Summit. And they're coming up with really, really great ideas on how to combat censorship together, like coming together through fundraising and so forth. And so I believe that the only way to overcome this is really for us in the alternative and independent media to unite, no matter what your political backgrounds are, and just to find common ground in supporting free speech and our First Amendment.
Well, Manar Mahawish, I know in Houston there was a great gathering of people, including Eleanor Goldfield of ACT OUT and so many others. Definitely plug Project Censored into the front line on that battle and Media Freedom Foundation. And, of course, we're small, but we've been around 43 years, and we know a lot of people that are maybe on the left end of that political spectrum getting green lights. And so we'll certainly be jumping to the defense of any of the independent groups that we know and work with and make sure that we fight for the right to not be smeared and to be heard. And again, we've been speaking with Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News. Manar, we're about out of time for this segment, and this is going to be really unfair, but we didn't get to Venezuela. Could you give our listeners at least a quick sentiment that you have about what's happening there? Abby Martin's going to be coming on shortly, and she's going to be talking a lot about that. But we got so into NewsGuard and so into other things, rightfully so, that we didn't have time for this. But I wanted to give you a minute to have a say about what's happening in Venezuela with the coup.
Well, I have my Facebook up, and I have NewsGuard checkmark green on the Wall Street Journal, and the article says, Goldman Sachs bought Venezuela's state oil company's bonds. There you have it. That's what's happening in Venezuela.
Yeah.
It kind of sums up what we've been talking about, too. I think Abby Martin will definitely be more well-equipped to talk about it, since she's done a lot of reporting from on the ground there. But yeah, we just witnessed our president, our administration, and the Donald Trump administration recognize some super obscure guy and declared him the new president of Venezuela. And this guy is backed by the Israeli apartheid government. He's backed by the United States government and several other right-wing governments, including Brazil and Colombia and South America. And there is no doubt and there is no question that the Maduro government, it's a coup. The Maduro government is going to be replaced and removed. It's going to be violent. It's going to get more ugly. The United States is pumping in millions and millions of dollars into the right-wing opposition in Venezuela to paint the picture as if, though, it's socialism that has driven Venezuela to the brink of disaster, when in reality, it is U.S. economic warfare. It is U.S. funding of right-wing groups and movements in Venezuela and the disrespect of the Venezuelan people and culture there. And so things are going to get ugly, and I know that Abby will have a lot more to say about it than I will.
Well, Manar Mahawish, I want to thank you for all the work you do at Mint Press News, and thank you for taking time out of your day, and we'll be sure to be catching up with you again in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Up next on the Project Censored Show, Abby Martin from the Empire Files. Stay with us.
Colonized and terrorized by the world's biggest killers. The U.S. government, the biggest weapon and drug dealers. Filling prisons with children, incarcerating the future. MySpace and Facebook got us stuck on computers. Stuck on stupid bumping music that's abusive to the shorties. And the nonsense that you're spitting, they just listening, absorbing. I've been dormant, I've awoken, I'm a giant, I'm ready. I'm with the Apple and Oaxaca, and we hold the machetes. I rock hard like Palestinian children holding slingshots. I'm with every single kid that's down for hip hop. For the culture, the life, what it really stands for. This music is resistance, it's the voice of the poor.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On this segment of the program, we are joined again by the independent journalist Abby Martin at MediaRoots.org, also the force behind the Empire Files. And Abby Martin joined us not long ago on the Project Censored Show to talk about various things, including online censorship. She was also one of the keynote speakers at the Media Freedom Summit last October. And Abby Martin also has a history of reporting on South America and Venezuela. And that's going to be the topic of our discussion in this segment of the show, though, of course, Abby Martin is quite well-rounded. We might riff on a few other things, but I know that Venezuela is a very pressing issue, and Abby Martin agreed to take time out of her busy schedule, and she is now with us at the Project Censored Show. Abby Martin, thank you for joining us.
Mickey. Thanks for having me.
So what's going on with the coup d'etat in Venezuela?
Well, Mickey, if you were watching the corporate media, you wouldn't think it's a coup at all. You would think that this is democracy, because coups can lead to democracy. Look, this is a coup like there's never been a coup before. It is not only a coup, it's one of the most brazen, blatant coup attempts in modern history, resurrecting the Monroe Doctrine when the U.S. empire thought that it can assert its hegemony and decide the future of these independent Latin American states that were emerging. So let's just break down what's going on. I mean, we have Juan Guaido, a person who was self-elected to the National Assembly, kind of akin to, let's just say, Congress in the U.S. So they have elections multiple times a year. It's one of the countries with the most elections in Latin America. So odd for a dictatorship to have so many elections every year, not just presidential, gubernatorial, mayoral, the list goes on and on. So Juan Guaido was basically elected president of this body, not even from an election. He was kind of appointed by a small elite cabal within the National Assembly. Now, this body kind of has similar ratings to the popularity that Congress does in the U.S. In fact, when you poll Americans, they like cockroaches more than they do Congress, kind of similar to Venezuela. It has a 70% disapproval rating, the body that just elected this random guy president of the country. Now let's compare that to Nicolas Maduro, who won a second presidential term in a free and fair election, monitored by hundreds of independent electoral observers, won with 6 million votes, trounced the next competitor with 5 million votes. We have, again, observers from all over the world verifying that these elections are fair and free. We're talking about a country with 30 million people. 20 million of those people are eligible voters. 6 million of those eligible voters voted for Maduro. So when you look at who Juan Guaido is, he's much more known in the elite circles of Washington, D.C., where he came and attended prestigious elite universities, got 2 degrees. His school mascot was called the Colonials, believe it or not. Much more well-known in these elite circles of the Marco Rubios and the Mike Pences than he is in Venezuela, where before he declared himself president, 80% of Venezuelans had no idea who he was. And it's really amazing because he didn't just pop out of the blue. He's been working hand in glove with the U.S. empire and its regime change proxy fronts, the Organization of American States, National Endowment for Democracy, and the USAID, over the last 10 years, while they've been giving tens of millions of dollars to fund the opposition. This guy has been heavily involved in these opposition street battles where there's fascistic violence, where it leads to multiple Chavistas getting lynched, multiple socialist enclaves getting targeted, firebombed. My own colleague from Telesur was shot in the back by one of these opposition protesters. So he was intimately involved in those, what they're called guarimbas. He's closely aligned with another opposition leader, Leopoldo Lopez, who you hear ad nauseum from the corporate media. Oh, he couldn't run against Maduro in the elections because they jailed the opposition. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the U.S. would jail the opposition here if they tried to violently overthrow the elected U.S. government, because that's what this guy did. He tried to violently overthrow Maduro several times, and he's not even in jail. He's on house arrest. So this is where this guy comes from. This is the world and kind of the sphere that he comes from. And when you compare him to Maduro, they really quite represent that class struggle pretty viscerally. You have Juan Guaido, an elite, prestigious D.C. born and bred guy propped up by the U.S. establishment. And then Nicolas Maduro, a bus driver who's been a worker his whole life. And they pretty starkly represent the class struggle that's pretty dynamically apparent in Venezuela right now, Mickey.
Well, Abby Martin, pretty much everything that you just said, well, you're not going to read that in the New York Times. You're not going to see that in the Washington Post, and certainly on the cable networks, the television news. If you could sum up or encapsulate for us, what are some of the things that we're hearing about the Maduro government, that millions of people in the street are opposing him, that he's a dictator, that he was illegitimately put into office? I mean, there's a whole narrative of trying to undermine the government of Venezuela while simultaneously U.S. banks and financial interests are trying to control the oil there.
Absolutely. I just saw John Bolton, I think on Fox News, just openly saying we want to seize the oil. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. Largest in the world. or than Saudi Arabia. And interestingly enough, Mickey, compare the coverage of Venezuela to Saudi Arabia. We don't call their regime illegitimate. We don't call them a dictatorship, a brutal monarchy that's tyrannically repressing, beheading dissidents in the street. When they're not busy dismembering journalists and then getting a pat on the back from Trump, Trump just seemed more annoyed that he didn't cover it up enough.
Well, you couldn't get in the way of the $110 billion arms deal so they could continue the proxy war in Yemen. I mean, this is real politique writ large right in front of your faces. They're not even hiding it.
Exactly. It's so brazen, Mickey, and we can get into who Elliot Abrams is in a second.
Yeah.
This
Iran-Contra.
Self-declared, you know, liaison, again, resurrecting the Monroe Doctrine, resurrecting this kind of Reagan death squad regime change operations that were going on in the 80s. They've just implemented, like, the worst guy. It's almost like they just are rubbing it in our faces at this point, Mickey. But you asked about the corporate media coverage, and this
yes.
is very important, because you look at RT, you look at Telesur, you look at a lot of state-run media and international media around the world, they do tell a larger, more complicated, complex story, because that's what Venezuela is. It's not black and white. It's obviously very complicated on the ground, especially when you're talking about the economic crisis, the economic war, how hyperinflation works. It's a little bit complicated for people, and it's important to construe and articulate that in a comprehensive way. Well, when you look at the corporate media, it is literally an extension of the Pentagon. It makes sense when you realize that we live in a corporate state and we don't actually live in a free and fair democracy. So, of course, we're not going to have a free and fair media when it's subsidized by banks, oil corporations, and defense contractors. So you look at someone like John Bolton boasting about how we want to seize the oil from Venezuela, but then you look at the quote-unquote liberal media, Mickey, they are just masking all of this in humanitarianism. But they are all pushing Trump from the right. They love this. All of a sudden, the narrative becomes completely lockstep. Any time that we're talking about maintaining U.S. empire or expanding U.S. empire or developing militarism around the world, they completely stand in line and are uniformly lockstep with the administration. It is quite fascinating. So the New York Times, look back 100 years ago when they were whitewashing Hitler. Look back 50 years ago when they were whitewashing Pinochet and actually claiming Salvador Allende was a dictator who was mismanaging his economy, not mentioning that the CIA was waging an economic war there to, quote, make the economy scream. So fast forward to today, harping on Russia ad nauseum, nonstop, they actually had the audacity, Mickey, to say the Russia alleges that this is a U.S.-backed coup and that Maduro's backed by Russia. Russia backed Maduro. No, Maduro's backed by Venezuelans. And reality is not a Russian talking point. So that's where we're at. We're getting gaslit by corporate media saying not only is this not a coup, not only is this a democratic measure, that's a Russian talking point, Mickey, to say it's a coup. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it's so bold and in your face, and people are just lapping it up because, similarly to North Korea, you can really say anything you want about Venezuela, and people will believe it. I had people all day telling me people are eating rats, dogs, breaking into zoos and eating animals. Look, I see these headlines, too. You have to read the articles because buried within these articles of these sensationalist headlines, you see the truth buried in the lead. The zookeeper denounced that statement. He said, no, they're not stealing animals to eat. They're stealing them to sell them on the black market. Why are you guys lying? And you have to ask a question, Mickey, when the corporate media is an extension of the Pentagon and they are purposefully omitting, purposefully obfuscating 50% of the story here. They are calling Maduro a dictator. They're saying that he's violently repressing millions of protesters in the street. They parroted that death toll, 170 killed by violent security forces in 2017. Guess what? I was there. I was in the middle of these protests. They were violent armed street battles. These Guarimba protesters were responsible for over half the deaths in the streets. Lynchings, assassinations of socialists, black chavistas, setting them on fire. They just set another body on fire a couple days ago. This is what they do. And people like Juan Guaido and Leopoldo Lopez encourage this and facilitate this so then they can create this international outcry and this kind of faux humanitarian crisis to foment regime change. It's a tale as old as time, but for some reason, people keep buying it.
So, Abby, it's very clear at this point that the corporate media and the U.S. military have chosen their sides, and they're with Juan Guaido, as you mentioned. What is it that Juan Guaido will do or allow to occur that Maduro wouldn't have?
This is really fascinating. back in 1998, when Hugo Chavez was democratically elected, he was coming into a pretty abysmal economic situation. We're talking about a country that was ravaged by centuries of colonialism. Venezuela was an emerging failed state. It had inflation levels that are much worse than they are today. There were actual massacres of protesters in the street under Rafael Caldera, which was a U.S. puppet regime at the time. And that's kind of the situation that we saw Hugo Chavez rise to power. And he reflected the will of the people. He went in the barrios. He administered widespread social programs that really meant to uplift the poor. And indeed, you saw in the first couple of years of his presidency, millions of people lifted out of abject poverty. We saw homelessness plummet. Venezuela, until I think this year or last year, had the lowest homelessness rates in the entire hemisphere. And just widespread programs like CLAP, because a lot of people look at the economy of Venezuela and they say, oh, this is a failed socialist experiment. What they don't realize is that Maduro did not nationalize all of the industries. He nationalized the oil. He did not nationalize all of the paper product industries, the financial industries, and also the food product industries. And when you see these mass shortages, yes, there is a huge economic crisis going on in Venezuela. The thing is, anyone who's realistic and honest about Venezuela will tell you it's not that there's a mass shortage of all food products. It's that there's a mass shortage of certain food items and particular products like toilet paper. And then you look at who owns the circulation of these products. Then you realize in a mixed economy, there are still oligarchs that are alive and well, anti-Maduro CEOs who control and propagate the output of these products. That's just one aspect of this. Hugo Chavez threatened not only them, but of course the U.S. empire, right? Not only was his rhetoric very staunchly against U.S. imperialism, but he really wanted to uplift the poor, and his policies sought to do just that. Now, compared to today, it's funny that the media was painting Hugo Chavez as the exact same way that they paint Maduro, a dictator, corrupt, economic crisis. Really? Because back then, oil was booming and there was no economic crisis. So why did the corporate media line never change from Chavez to Maduro? You know, now they can use kind of the rates of inflation to give their argument a little bit more bolstered. But it is interesting that the line has never changed because the corporate media sought out to make Maduro and Chavez illegitimate, even at a time when the economy was booming. And what Juan Guaido wants to do, to your point, Chase, we already know what he wants to do. They revealed their hand in 2002 with that first U.S.-backed coup. Again, Elliot Abrams was involved in that. The Bush administration was involved in that. They overthrew Hugo Chavez, kidnapped him at the barrel of a gun, and they immediately upended the Constitution, immediately sought to privatize that oil, and completely upend all of the social gains that Chavez put into place, housing programs, education, health care. Fast forward to today, Juan Guaido already has revealed his hand, large-scale privatization efforts to completely remove all of the gains that have been done. People think it's hyperbolic to call this kind of a fascistic takeover. It is not, because we're talking about the largest, most active, most politically engaged social force in the country, which is Chavismo. And those are the people who voted Maduro in. If this guy wanted to win an election, he would have ran against Maduro last year. He chose not to. He's trying to appoint himself now, and he wants to rule and impose his rule to erase the voice of 6 million Chavistas. That's fascism.
We're speaking with Abby Martin of The Empire Files, and we'll continue our conversation about Venezuela after this musical break. Stay with us.
How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison just because I won't trade humanity for patriotism.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with the independent journalist, Abby Martin, one of the co-founders of Media Roots, also had a fantastic show on RT called Breaking the Set a number of years ago, is now the driving force behind the Empire Files. And if you haven't seen it, you definitely need to check it out. Abby Martin, no stranger to the Project Censored audience, wrote a fantastic foreword for Censored 2019, Fighting the Fake News Invasion, that Andy Lee Roth and I put together. And before the break, we were speaking about what's going on in Venezuela, the coup there, And of course, we were reminded that in 2002, back in the early W. Bush years, George W. Bush years after the 9/11 attacks, that there was a coup attempt led by the United States in Venezuela to overthrow Hugo Chavez. And that coup failed. And so, Abby, before the break, we were getting into a little of that. And you might want to remind our listeners again that they did try, they denied it, but then it didn't happen.
It didn't happen, Mickey, because first of all, you need the military behind you if you want to install a U.S. puppet with the military for a military coup to be successful. And Chavez was a military man. He came from the military. He utilized the military in order to win himself. And you still see that allegiance, that strong allegiance with Maduro today. And that's why you saw Vladimir Petrino, who I was actually lucky enough to confront myself. You know, people call me a puppet for the Venezuelan government because I sold a show to Telesur. Oddly enough, I never had any editorial interference whatsoever. I was able to confront their defense minister about everything that corporate media is painting about him. I doubt you could say the same about Trump and his cabinet. So, yeah, that coup failed, Mickey. Obviously so, A, because of the military, and B, because the masses would not sit down. They were in the streets. They were crowding around the jail that they were holding him. I mean, they just would not let it go. And it was very clear at that point that the coup was not going to be successful. But it is very funny how the New York Times wrote about that coup. They immediately recognized whoever the U.S. was trying to impose at the time and called him a distinguished businessman. And at the same time discarded Hugo Chavez as, of course, a communist dictator.
And there are several outlets now that are covering, not many, but there are covering what's happening in Venezuela. And of course, you've been making the rounds a lot of different places. And of course, on Media Roots, you dissect these things at the Real News Network, realnews.com. You've been doing some of this as well. Let's come up to the present and the Trump administration and have you talk to us a little bit more about what's going on and what you think is happening in the Trump administration supporting this coup.
This would never have happened without a green light and facilitation from the Trump administration directly. And let's just bring it back to that coup in 2002. That was obviously a very brazen attempt to replace Hugo Chavez. We know that Venezuela has always been a thorn in the side of U.S. empire, not only for its rhetoric, but because of its robust socialist experiment, not countering, not laying down, not bowing down to U.S. capitalism and hegemony and militarism. So, of course, it was always on the radar of the U.S. government. That's why it was so interesting that it kind of left alone for a little bit until the Obama administration in 2015 randomly declared Venezuela a national security threat and slapped about 6 or 7 sanctions on the country, very out of the blue, very weird. But then Trump really has taken it to a completely unprecedented level. And before we get into what he's done with this specific coup, I mean, right when he got into office, he set laser sights on Latin America. I think days after getting inaugurated, he invited Leopoldo Lopez's wife to the White House, a clear signal to the opposition that, hey, I have your back and I'm going to facilitate everything I can to get you guys in power. And just over the last 2 years, what Trump has done has completely debilitated and crushed Venezuela's economy. I mean, he has slapped 63 sanctions at least on Venezuela on top of the 7 that Obama did. And people like to think of sanctions as kind of a soft power. No, sanctions are war. Sanctions are an act of war, and they hurt the most vulnerable, poor, working-class sectors of any respective population. It's not just corrupt government elites. It's the poor people who can't get access to food and medicine. And when you're talking about a country like Venezuela that basically thrives on oil revenue and survives on imports and exports, yeah, that's a big deal when they order insulin and the U.S. government's blocking insulin shipments to them. That's genocidal. And look no further than what happened in Iraq when 500,000 babies died from dysentery-related illness because of the U.S. sanctions there. And you heard Madeleine Albright justify that as well. It was worth it. Venezuela needs to trade with their oil. You need to trade oil with U.S. dollars. The U.S. is, you know, the largest economic force in the world, and it bends countries to its will through economic means. And sanctions are just one of these fronts. And the sanctions on Venezuela have completely destroyed its ability to recover economically. They can't take out loans. They can't borrow. They can't sell oil in U.S. dollars. So all of these things have a major, major impact in Venezuela. And when you couple that with the plummeting of just oil prices, a couple of years ago. Yeah, there's going to be a huge economic crisis, but guess what? They can't pick themselves back up with the things that the U.S. administration has done to cripple them. And of course, this is completely obfuscated, right? We don't talk about the economic war. We don't talk about the economic war being waged within the country or external forces waging an economic war or what sanctions do to exacerbate the situation. And Trump, rhetorically aside from threatening Venezuela every time they do anything, this coup, again, like you saw John Bolton threatening a couple months ago when he slapped more sanctions on Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, he called it the trick of tyranny. And that really reminded me eerily of the axis of evil, because they want to do to Latin America what they did to the Middle East, and they're doing it. And they are dressing up this coup in constitutional garb, which is funny considering the same opposition group who's now installing themselves as the new leadership of this country just tried to blow Maduro up on stage with C4 explosives a couple months ago. So why are they now pretending to be such law-abiding constitutionalists when they just tried to assassinate him mere weeks ago?
Well, Abby Martin, it's interesting. Kevin Gostola over at shadowproof.com, who's been a guest on the show a number of times, actually has an interesting article. CNN goes undercover to manufacture consent for coup attempt in Venezuela, where he talks about a CNN, quote, exclusive report from inside Venezuela, airing it multiple times on January 28 as a prime example, quote, of how influential media outlets in the U.S. effectively create propaganda for the opposition there, which is now receiving funds from President Donald Trump's administration. And so CNN is basically embedding itself in the midst of what's happening there and really obfuscating what's happening and really trying to tip the scales.
Exactly. And one last thing about the Trump administration, Mike Pence called Juan Guaido the day before he declared himself president and told him, go ahead. And we know that he's been in talks with Juan Guaido for months. And we know that they've been meeting with the opposition for months. And we know that they've been given tens of millions of dollars from the U.S. empire for years to try to foment this. And what Guaido represents is an end to that socialist experiment. He represents the downfall, the opening up of markets so the U.S. can pillage them, as John Bolton so plainly stated earlier. But yeah, CNN, it doesn't matter what corporate media outlet you're looking at. They're all saying the same things. Some of them mask it in faux humanitarianism, right? Their interventionism and faux humanitarianism. But let's just face it, to be hired at these news outlets, it's naive to not understand how they work, Mickey, and I know that you know this better than anyone, but look, to work at these news outlets, you need to believe in the myth of American exceptionalism. You need to believe the U.S. empire is a benign force and that its deeds are done out of goodwill. And if you don't believe that, you wouldn't be able to work there, right? And if you question that narrative, if you try to pave some sort of editorial freedom, like let's say they go to Venezuela, they see the massive pro-government marches that are being censored from our media deliberately. If they tried to tell their bosses or producers, they would get squashed. That would get erased. We know that's how it works. They like to paint outlets like RT, Telesur, Al Jazeera as puppet media outlets that have to parrot the line of dictators. No, actually, there's more editorial freedom at state media by far than there is at corporate media, especially when it comes to towing that bipartisan foreign policy consensus. Anything that's done to maintain the empire is agreed upon uniformly. And the second you buck that, that's when all hell breaks loose. We already know what happened to Phil Donahue for questioning the Iraq War. You cannot question the motivations of the U.S. empire or the militaristic presence, these 800 bases, the fact that there's special operations in 70% of the world's nations. No, don't question any of that, and you'll be just fine where you are. And one more thing about just kind of the NGO's role, because it might sound cartoonish or absurd to suggest that, you know, Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch is somehow complicit in parroting regime change narratives, but indeed they are, because a lot of these organizations get sought out by opposition figures, right? Opposition figures who are closely tied to U.S. think tanks, NGOs, and also politicians in the U.S. They have a direct line and stream of communication with them. So just kind of by default, a lot of the Chavistas get ignored. A lot of the opposition violence gets completely ignored from these human rights quote-unquote reports, We know with that famous story, the babies out of the incubators that paved the way for the first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. We know that Amnesty and Human Rights Watch bought that hook, line, and sinker as well. They actually said there were hundreds of babies thrown out of incubators. So we have to kind of question whenever we're seeing these things coming at us full force in that uniform fashion. I recommend people, and I hear all the time, listen to Venezuelans, right? Listen to the Venezuelans. Look, through NED, through USAID, we have to understand the social media operation as well and the construction of these social media narratives, whether it be correcting the record on Israel. We know that there's, you know, universities that employ war rooms there in Tel Aviv to edit Wikipedia and argue with people on social media. So, you know, I don't take Venezuelans on Twitter as kind of like the ultimate truth. And a lot of these people are sock puppet accounts, obviously. And you have to also kind of speculate how much money is being fed from the opposition and also the U.S. government to monitor that online and to kind of create this false notion that the majority of Venezuelans agree with an undemocratic coup.
So, Abby, I know you've done a lot of on-the-ground reporting in Venezuela, but you're not there right now. Who can our audience turn to try to get some of that on-the-ground video or articles? Who can we turn to for that on-the-ground reporting?
The Venezuelans that we need to be hearing from are the poor Afro-Venezuelans, the indigenous Venezuelans, the working-class Venezuelans who are in the streets, who are being covered by outlets like Telesur, which is not only funded by the Venezuelan government, but by four or five other Latin American countries, and outlets like Venezuela Analysis. They are rigorously reporting on a daily basis, out in the streets, doing man on the streets, giving an honest assessment about what's going on. These are Venezuelans who are left-wing, who are PSUV-oriented, or just at least not taking the opposition side, and they give a very accurate assessment of reality, and they don't sugarcoat anything, but they do give the truth, and they give both sides. And it's very, very important to support outlets like that and watch and listen to outlets like that, because again, the corporate media cannot be trusted on this. And media who are deliberately ignoring and censoring what we know exists as another side of the story cannot be trusted. And I cannot stress that enough. They cannot be trusted. So please, media literacy is a very important tool for all of us. We need to understand how we're being propagandized to, how these narratives and regime change operations are being fed to us, because these can't happen without the complicity of the U.S. public. The Iraq War would not have happened unless the people were behind it, because the media was paving that complicity for months. And they're doing the same thing here. And if this really was about a starving nation or humanitarian intervention, we would be invading Yemen and we would be invading Haiti, which is by far the most impoverished country in the region. So you have to ask yourself and kind of poke holes through these narratives.
Indeed, Abby Martin. And it's also just amazing to watch over places like MSNBC. In one segment, it's talking about the evils of Russia meddling in other countries' elections. And then they skip over to the next segment where they're cheerleading the coup in Venezuela. It's pretty riveting stuff. I'm very glad you mentioned VenezuelaAnalysis.com. I was going to tack that on there, but I figured you would mention it. A source that we at Project Censored have long looked to. And also, Abby Martin, you're one of the great sources that we look to, and all the great work you do with the Empire Files, and previously our guest Manar Mahawish of Mint Press News. So, Abby, I wanted to thank you again for everything you're doing, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us about this very important issue that's being heavily skewed, where we're being heavily propagandized by the corporate media here in the United States and in the West. So, Abby Martin, thank you so much for joining the Project Censored show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mickey, and please don't take my word for it. We have all of this evidence and facts and all of the Venezuelan people speaking for themselves on our YouTube channel, Empire Files, and on our Twitters, Abby Martin and Michael Preisner. So please check that out. Don't take my word for it. Find the truth out for yourself, you guys. Really appreciate it.
Land supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaigns.
You've been listening to the Project Censored show. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program, with myself, co-host Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and Dennis Murphy is our associate producer. Thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.